listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN app and online, tsn1050.ca. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, getting the show back on the rails here. For those of you listening on radio, every day we do a TV-only segment where we throw to SportsCenter.
Yeah.
And it's a two-minute throw. And generally, we're all prepared for it. I kind of want to go back and watch what just happened. It was Garth Algar. I went full-blown Garth Algar on live TV on TSN4.
I'm having a good time.
I had to take a phone call.
So a serious call. You had something going on in your life.
So I told the grappler, I'm like, I need 2 minutes. And he's like, yeah, Brian could do it. No problem.
Which, again, nine times out of ten, I'm sitting here and I'm like, go ahead. I can cruise through
this. Exactly.
Because Megan, who is a savior of ours on TV,
of course,
always sends me an email and I always have it up. Today, I had to run to the washroom. And because it's such a short segment, I came back and I guess I was taking my time because I just lost sense of time. And I'm walking in, and the grappler's like, you're up in 10, you're up in 10. And I'm panicking. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get the email
up. You're up in 10 by yourself,
By yourself. And he's like, yeah, Noodles is taking a call. You're on your own because O-Dog's not in here today. And here's the thing about the SportsCenter throws. They rotate through hosts all the time.
Yeah, so you're not sure if it's Corey Warren or Hamilton.
As we're coming up on the throw, and again, this is exclusively on TV, I'm yelling at the grappler. I'm like, who's hosting? Who's hosting? I haven't seen the email yet.
Yeah.
And he didn't know, so he's asking Megan. So I was literally Garth. Like, I came up, and I'm like, hi, SportsCenter will be on.
I'm having a good time.
That is hilarious.
I had no idea what they're doing on the show. I had no idea who was hosting. It's all my fault. I should have been back and had it prepared. But anyway, listen, this is the industry we chose. So curveballs get thrown at you every once in a while.
But
it's all good.
I actually would think it's hilarious if Mulls or the grappler like just gave you like a random name.
Oh, it would have been great. Like
Derek Taylor's back.
Yeah.
He's hosting.
DT is back for the night.
Yeah.
Derek Taylor, it's so great to see Derek. I would have said, I was in burgundy mode. Literally,
you would have said anything.
The grappler could have said, Al is back and he's hosting SportsCenter tonight. And I would have been like, wow.
Joe Narsa. Yeah, Joe Narsa.
Joe Narsa. He's making the SportsCenter rounds. Our boy Al.
Yeah.
Who I saw Al on CTV News Channel.
I heard that.
Game 6, he was down there in a suit. He did a spectacular job.
Steph told me, I think it was on his Instagram or something. Steph's like, Joe Narsa is doing like a CTV hit. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's producing it? She's like, no, he is on. So Al was on.
He was live on CTV News Channel giving updates on the Raptors game.
Like they
from Maple Leaf Square. He was down at Jurassic Park. Yeah, it was outstanding.
Good
did
for
a
him.
Great job.
Good for him.
So anyway, maybe, I don't know, maybe Al is hosting SportsCenter. Who knows?
So funny.
Yeah, so that's what I was doing in the break. And Noodles, you were dealing with your own thing, and now we're
it's
in
all
here,
good,
and it's all
though.
Good.
It's all good, but like
we're back on the rails.
You get one of these messages was like, nah, your buddy back home had this, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Is he all right? Is he like...
No, he's okay,
He's okay.
So it's all good.
You can't get a text. People know I'm on air. You're like, yeah, that you know, this guy had a stroke. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fine though.
Don't worry about it.
Call me later. Call me later. You're like, what?
Give me a shot when you can.
Yeah, it's all good.
All right, but we're all good. We're back on the rails.
It's crazy.
There's Dreger. He's out there in Vancouver.
Oh, him and Craig. Well, of course, Craig would be front and center. Craigslist, Bobby Mack's list. Like, the draft gets a lot of play, but I'll be curious. Like, is it? Has it come down to, is it Kakko or Hughes, or is it just Hughes?
I've been of the impression it's Hughes, but, I mean, don't quote me on that, because Kakko had a great world championships, and he's a really good player,
clearly. I thought I read, too, that New Jersey isn't tipping their hand. They're kind of playing a little possum.
Well, I think that makes it more interesting. If I'm the league, I don't want my teams to, unless it's so obvious. Like, Edmonton, what are they going to say? Yes, we're taking McDavid.
Right.
Now, Eichel was a great prospect as well. I guess there was an element of suspense, but not really. You knew they were taking McDavid.
Exactly.
The Leafs, you were fairly certain they were taking Matthews. Now, Laine was close, but I think we all thought they were taking Matthews.
Right.
But when you get a draft like this where there isn't that clear-cut superstar, like generational-type talent, and I don't believe that Jack Hughes is considered a generational talent.
Right, right.
Why not hold out for some suspense? Why not do that? If I'm the league, I would urge my team, like, just hold off if you can. Don't go public with it.
Well, you know Jersey's going to go to the podium with a huge jersey or a Kako. Like, the name bar is going to be on it. Like, it's not going to be a Velcro.
They know who they're taking.
They know who they're taking.
They're well aware who they're taking. They know today who they're taking.
But managers, like, you wonder if Jimmy Benning's going to make a splash at 10. Like, is he going to trade up? I thought I read somewhere else that there was another, I think it was Pierre Dorion that said that he's not shy to move around the draft. Now Dorion, they have a boatload of picks in the next 3 years. I want to say it's 28 picks.
They do. They've got something like 8 second-round picks in the next 3 drafts.
Well, Erik Karlsson signing with San Jose got them another pick.
Right.
And I saw this stat the other day where, now, the return, you know, Stone goes out, Karlsson goes out, you know, like,
and again,
Duchesne goes out.
If they didn't make that Duchesne trade, they'd be picking 4th on Friday night.
Right, right. But, like, they've got a position to rebuild their organization quite well here, because if you draft properly, and then you can use some of these picks as currency.
Absolutely.
To grab players. And let's not forget, I believe they're $43 million below the floor.
Well, I mean, that's where the owner comes into it, and that's where I'm hesitant to see where Ottawa's going to take it. But I do think if you're a GM and you're trying to build a team,
yeah,
they've hit rock bottom. There's only up.
Right.
And they've got some really good prospects and a ton of picks and a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
They are in a great spot if the owner is willing to follow through for it.
Right. And I misspoke.
That's what it comes down to.
I think they've got $43 million to spend if they spent.
Yeah.
Which
they're never going to spend all that, but they got to spend $30 million or $25
million. Here's another thing. Pierre Dorion can call Ken Holland and go, I'll take that contract off you.
Mm-hmm.
Sweeten the deal. Because I need to get to the floor. So I've got to spend a certain amount of money, and I'll add more picks or add a prospect. Like, you know, I believe Lucic controls his own destiny, but Puljujärvi, you know, it looks like he could be a sweetener if there is a deal involved. Like, that's the type of stuff where if Dorion is creative, he can also add to the depth of his organization right away by getting some live players and
Absolutely.
Taking on some bad contracts.
Well, Ottawa has not been brought up a lot in terms of pursuing free agents, but why wouldn't they be?
Yeah.
Like, why, unless you still think you're a year or two of growth before you actually are going to compete, which I think they probably are.
Right.
Especially in this division. I don't see them, not this year. They're not catching Toronto, Tampa, Boston.
Right.
They're not. So maybe you don't even call up Tyler Myers or Jake Gardner. You know, you may just like, hey, listen, it doesn't make sense in our timeline right now. But if there was ever going to be a team that would be open to an offer sheet, it's them.
Mm-hmm.
Like a young player, you can give up the picks. You can give up.
Yeah.
You might not want to because they would be really good picks. But you've got the money.
Yeah.
You feel like you've got a good core of young players right now.
And add to that.
And you add to it. Now, again, they may not want to hand over 4 first-round picks because if they're still going to be a bad team, that's probably not going to work.
Well,
and I'm not sure how many of these young players want to go there considering that.
I was just going to say, and the player has to agree to it.
Right. But let's say, again, using Toronto as an example.
Kasperi
Kapanen, they could give him a longer-term deal at pretty decent money, and if they only have to give up a first, second, and third or whatever, they might be willing to do that.
I'd have to look at what the rules are, but say you did a 5-year deal for Kapanen at $5 million, and he was willing to sign that, and again, we're playing hypothetical and being ridiculous, but if Pierre Dorion wanted to get creative and said, I'm gonna try and pluck this player out of Toronto because they could be in some cap issues, and I like this player, he's young, he can certainly play in my top 6, and we need to get to the floor anyways,
mm-hmm.
and I have no problem. I don't believe, I think in that $5 million range, like, I don't know, I'm not looking at the chart right now what he would give up. Like, you're not giving up 4 first-round picks. I think there's some second-round picks and some moving parts in there. So, Again, Kapanen would have to want to do that,
and that's
which
a big
he may
part
not.
Of it. He may be like, wait a minute, I'm not going from one of the top seven or eight teams in the league to the team that finished dead last.
I'm being ridiculous, but I'm just saying like
no, that's but these
the
are all things that are being thrown out.
And you, if you haven't thought about them, shame on you.
Well, you said Ray Shiro, the GM of the Devils, was speaking with who? ESPN?
Yeah.
And said...
Gino sent an internal email, and he swore in the email, not Gino, but Ray Shiro, saying like...
Offer sheets can happen. There's no gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, F that. He said managers and owners are ultra-competitive.
Well, I get that, but they've also been ultra competitive for the past 5 or 6 years when they've never happened.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I get it, and I understand the bravado, and I think it's more bluster than anything else, and I think it's pandering to his market, where I'm sure there's people down there saying, hey, we got another first overall pick. Let's go out there and get someone else here, because Taylor Hall, we want to make sure we can keep him. Then you got Heischer, you got Jack Hughes, you had another big piece. Now you're really rocking down there, but... They were competitive 2 or 3 years ago. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Every GM was competitive when Mark Stone could have been had for like easily with an offer sheet last year.
Yeah.
Considering the position Ottawa was in. No one was competitive enough to pick up Mark Stone. You know what I'm saying? I feel like these guys are now, they're being asked about it so much. They have to come out and be like, oh, we would do it. And we're, well, I'll believe it when I see it.
Well,
because we just don't see offer sheets.
We don't.
They don't happen.
But, half of that is the players have to sign in.
But how many reports have we heard where teams have put it on the table? I haven't heard many.
I heard of one last year, but it didn't go through. That's it.
The player turned it down?
The player was like, no, I'm comfortable. But I know everyone here in Toronto is like, well, Mitch Marner will play that card. You got to be careful with that.
Absolutely.
And who's to say? Like, that's the one thing. Like, what team has that type of currency that Mitch Marner would leave his hometown, leave this situation, leave one of the top 7 or 8 teams in the league to go to situation X for an extra $2 million?
It doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't.
Unless
that one doesn't.
That's the fascination with this Mitch Marner scenario, where if he's so deadlocked on getting paid like Matthews... It's not really about the money at all. It's about the respect.
Right.
Because 11.6 or 10.5, you're a millionaire, you're a god, you're a local hero,
and after taxes,
you're a Maple Leaf.
And that, it's not that much, and you'll make it up in endorsement money.
Because Apple's not following you to Arizona.
Right.
Visa's not following you to Carolina.
Right.
Not happening.
Yeah.
It's happening in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, it's not about the money. It's about the respect.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is with Mitch Marner. That's what I believe it is with Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. I get it why he would say, I'm just as valuable. I'm just as good. I see a lot of 16 jerseys in the stands.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. But if you're dealing with that, that's a totally different element.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you can ever please someone who's always constantly seeking out respect.
Yeah.
No. You know, because how do you show it?
Right.
Because if you're not, like Mitch Marner got played more than Austin Matthews.
Right. That's showing respect.
That's showing respect. He got power play time, penalty kill time. Yeah. Matthews 2 years ago was on the second power play, not Mitch Marner.
Right.
He's been shown respect on the ice
but he's
as much,
it.
If not more, than Matthews. He's earned it,
but
absolutely.
That's the thing. He's earned it and delivered, and that's what he's saying.
Yes.
It doesn't matter right wing, center. I put up 94 points. I played, you know, I've been durable, knock on wood, like, don't look at that. Like,
right.
I think that's what he's saying.
Well, here's Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider. Dregs, do you get that, I guess, viewpoint here with Marner? Is obviously it's about dollars and cents. It's a business, but it's ultimately just about respect. That's why he wants what Matthews got paid, because he wants to be treated equally.
Well, I mean, maybe there's a small part of that. And, you know, maybe that's not just Mitch, that's, you know, those around Marner to some degree, but I don't think that that's a heavy motivator. I think that he just wants to experience and go through what he's earned. And that's the leverage of being a restricted free agent. And, you know, the only way that there is leverage is if you go into the interview period and you're willing to visit with teams and you're willing to attract and potentially sign the offer sheet. Otherwise, it's just a wasted experience. But before it ever gets to that point, I expect the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to have to table an offer here in the next number of days before June 26th. And then you see where it goes. You know, as we've talked about on the program before, you know, and if we're minimizing it here to respect, I don't think that Mitch Marner is going to be too bent if the Toronto Maple Leafs come in at $11 million, as an example, maybe even 10 and a half, right? I mean, he realizes that if the salary cap is below 82, which we now think it's going to be 82 or 81 and a half, I mean, three men probably can't win the Stanley Cup on their own. So he can't control what happened with Matthews. He can't control what happened with Tavares or Nylander. He can only control his own environment. He wants to be treated fairly. If he's going to draw a line in the sand at 11-5, then that might force the Toronto Maple Leafs hand, but I don't know that he's willing to do that.
With Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, I saw you on, I think it was That's Hockey last night, from beautiful Brooklyn, Ontario.
Yeah.
And I loved the way you phrased it, because Gino asked you about this salary cap stuff, and you stopped short and you said, I'm not even going to get into the minutia here because we're going to lose viewers, because it's such a heavy, complex scenario. But the end of the gist of it is they don't even know what the cap is yet, and the draft is in 48 hours. How frustrated are GMs throughout the league?
Yeah, super sour, especially those who are worried about it, the cap teams, right? Like the Toronto Maple Leafs, like Kyle Dubas. I mean, I can appreciate why the Players Association and the NHL have to go to these lengths. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the Players Association, whether or not they use the full inflator. There's enough revenue, I'm told, in the system where the cap could be at $85 million, but a higher cap means a higher escrow. Right? Because there's higher risk. A lower cap means lower escrow, and the membership of the Players Association is always going to vote in favor of a lower escrow, even though it does take money out of the system. But if you're a cap general manager, again, like Dubas or any of them, you're hamstrung here. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do, and that $500,000 sway one way or another is significant. It matters because it determines the type of player that you're potentially willing to trade. You know, could it be a lower end guy versus a guy that, you know, maybe you have to consider because he's a higher cap hit. So the business side of hockey is being stalled as the managers are waiting, and the decision may not come down until Saturday.
With Darren Dreger, a Hockey Insider. So Jesse Puljujärvi now wants out of Edmonton. Yeah. And I think there'll be a market based on potential and the fourth overall pick and talent that we've seen in the past, but he hasn't established himself at all in the National Hockey League.
Well, so, that's the problem. That's the problem, right? You know, if you were dealing with face value and you're talking about the fourth pick overall and just something had gone awry, you know, there'd be a strong market for him. I think there's interest. I think that there's a market, but it's probably not palatable for Ken Holland. You know, he doesn't want to give a mid-round or take a mid-round draft pick for Jesse Puljujärvi. So there's a waiting game. There's a game of chicken that could be played here. And the message that I'm getting from the Puljujärvi camp is that, hey, if he has to play in Europe, he has to play in the Finnish League, or he has to play in the KHL for a year, 2 years, 3 years, he's willing to do that. He's only 21. He just needs and wants a fresh start. So now the ball is going to be in the court of Ken Holland. You know, does he just deal with it now with the flexibility in the system and just move out a disgruntled player, or does he wait? And he's probably going to wait. He's probably going to wait because, again, you know, what happens if Jesse Puljujärvi does go to the KHL or goes to the Finnish League and gets his game in order and lights it up, and now all of a sudden, you know, a third-round pick turns into a low first or a second or a better prospect. I mean, you know, Kenny Holland can't allow Jesse Puljujärvi and Marcus Leto, the agent here, to control the process.
I agree. Dregs, do you sense it? Is this year, and I know every year leading up to the draft, there seems to be some chaos. There seems to be a lot of chatter. Is it any different this year? It seems, and I'm going to go back to Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments saying he's never heard from more managers and never had more chatter with managers than this year. Do you sense that?
Yeah, I do, Noodles. It's red alert. Now, that doesn't mean that there's going to be a flurry of deals here. Again, we've talked about the salary cap, and you know a lot of these teams are stalled on that as they're waiting. But there are other teams that are waiting and looking at it as opportunistic as well. I look at the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, Jim Benning wants to make a splash, not because the draft is in Vancouver, but because he needs to improve his hockey club. You know, he wants to add a defenseman or two. He wants to add some scoring. He's willing to consider moving the 10th overall pick either up or down, but I'm sure he's hoping that, you know, if the salary cap is lower than what some teams are expecting, maybe there's a play of desperation where he all of a sudden has a better option, a better player pop onto the market. And then you've got those teams that are willing to absorb cap space, like Ottawa, like Arizona, to some degree, like the Carolina Hurricanes. So I think that is as much to do with the volume of trade discussion than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a matter of time before it I mean, the salary cap demands it. Sometimes you got to get rid of players that you don't really want to get rid of.
Yeah.
Just because of the money. Like, you got to pick your poison. They've been doing it in the NFL forever. You see trades all the time where you're like, how could they trade that guy? Because they got to pay someone else.
Right.
Like, it's that easy, and it's difficult for fans to accept, but that's the reality in a hard cap.
Yeah. Well, and look, I had a conversation on Winnipeg TSN radio earlier today wondering about Neil Pionk and how he's going to fit into that group. And, you know, the projection that he could be an NHL top four defenseman. Well, he could be, but what's that Winnipeg blue line going to look like? And we don't, I mean, I know that it doesn't include Jake Chubra, but what if it doesn't include Tyler Myers? And it probably won't. Because, you know, again, the Carlson deal has influence. Even though it's not a similar position, the Kevin Hayes $50 million deal has influence. Now, all of a sudden, Jake Gardner, guys, Jake Gardner is going to have 10 years, $7 million per year. He's going to get a $50 million deal as an unrestricted free agent. And Tyler Myers is probably in that vicinity in Winnipeg as well. And then where does Ben Chiarot fit in? So it's all intertwined. And, you know, you look at that Winnipeg blue line, when it was healthy this past year and playing well, it was comparable to just about every blue line in the NHL. It's not going to be the same next year.
No, it won't be. All right, Dregs, enjoy it out there. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Okay, guys, thank you.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider.
We almost lost him, but I actually glad you hung on because I don't disagree. It's not the Kevin Hayes contract that drives everything up, but you're starting to look at comparables, and you know Tyler Myers is going to get something with a 7 in it. Jake Gardner could get something with a 7 in it. I don't disagree with that.
Well, and that's why, again, if getting back into the Maple Leafs, you can't sign Jake Gardner for $7 million a year. You just don't have the money. So
you don't.
That's it. End of discussion. He's got to go somewhere else if he wants that.
I think exactly. I think you circle back and see what he's willing to take if there is any type of friendly deal. But I have to believe, and I cannot speak for Jake, I think he's done here. Like, I think his mind is done here, too. Like, I think he's put in his time, had some success, had some ups and downs, didn't end well. Like,
time to move on.
The grass does get greener on the other side sometimes in a different organization.
He had a great run here.
Yeah.
A great run.
And, you know, what do you remember of him? Well, there is some good times. But it just, right now, he's a polarizing guy.
Listen, the past two game sevens in Boston have not gone well for him.
No.
And if he can get that kind of money, he should go get it because he can't get it in Toronto. And if they give it to him, I have no idea how they'll possibly explain it. I honestly can't. Like, forget what Jake Gardner wants. I have no idea how Kyle Dubas could possibly give him $7 million a year over seven.
No,
you've got Riley's going to need to get paid.
Yeah.
Anderson's going to need to be paid. We know about Marner, Kapanen, and Janssen. You can't.
Yeah.
Like, on the left side, you're fine in the top four. You've got Riley and Muzzin for next season.
Exactly. You need an entry level guy on that third pairing.
That's just the way it goes.
Or a Braden Coburn
or a veteran at 1.5 or something.
Exactly. Like
maybe Hainsey comes back at 1.8.
Cost efficient guy who can play in your third pairing.
Yeah. Can't be $7 million. No. Jake Gardner, there's no explanation you can give me that makes sense for him to come back.
Right.
So Again, the Leafs are not going to be big spenders. On July 1st, they're not in on anything significant.
I saw a tweet today. I think it was from Jason Greger, who works out in Edmonton, saying, can you remember the last time a cup winner had a significant unrestricted free agent signing? Now, they've had trades. They've had tinkering. But I don't remember Pittsburgh having this big splash. Now, they traded for Phil. That's a big splash.
That was a big one, but trade, you're right.
I'm talking Kevin Hayes deal.
Tyler Bozak doesn't count for St. Louis.
No, Tyler
was... He's not a big splash. He's a good player, support guy.
But Ryan O'Reilly was traded for. You know, Bozak and
Shen
Maroon,
was traded for.
Yeah, they were traded for. But I'm talking unrestricted free agent.
Big splash.
That puts your team over the top to win a cup that year.
No. No, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
No.
And I don't think it's going to happen this summer.
A lot of those players were in place. The team had the core in place. They added players at the deadline or through a trade.
Steve Phillips will join us, our Blue Jay analyst. We'll get his take on Marcus Stroman's comments postgame. They sounded like they were just very open and honest, and I think he knows that the writing's on the wall. But we'll play those comments from Stroman. We'll get Phillips to comment on that. What's going on between the umps and Machado and the umps and the league? We'll touch more on that. And we haven't really got into Edwin Encarnacion, who went deep last night for the Yankees. Well, looks weird with the pinstripes, man. Like, they didn't need him, and now they're like, Judge is coming up. Stanton returned last night. It's gross. So we'll get into that more with Phillips next. One of the more underrated songs, I think, of all time.
Beast of Burden?
Love Beast of Burden. Such a great track.
Who was that? Was there a duet in there? There was somebody else sang with him.
Not in Beast of Burden. It was in Gimme Shelter. It's not a duet, necessarily, but...
Maybe I've seen like Tina Turner sing with him.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me.
Something.
For sure. That definitely has happened, but it's not on the record, you know.
Okay, yeah.
On June 29th, the Rolling Stones are taking over Burrells Creek Event Grounds, and we are giving away a pair of tickets every day this week and next week on Overdrive. This is outstanding. A bunch of great Canadian bands are going to be featured as well up there. It's going to be an outstanding afternoon.
Fantastic.
All evening. Throw out a number between 1 and 10, Noodles.
6.
Number 6, 416-870-1050. Caller 6 at 416-870-1050. You're going to see the Stones.
Bette Midler did a duet.
Bette Midler?
Yes.
With Kramer? Was it Bette and Kramer?
No, it was Bette Midler performed with the Rolling Stones' Beast of Burden.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't picture Bette Midler
Stones. Like, for some reason, like... I'm weird with Cliff Clavin little notes
like
that.
Look at you over there.
That immediately it came to my mind.
All right. Here's our Blue Jays and MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. What's happening, Steve?
Well, I tell you what, you guys, the knowledge you're spewing out right now is amazing to me. I mean, seriously, you guys are music aficionados.
Yeah, it's really impressive stuff. We like to pat ourselves on the back, but it's even better when guys like you do it. Even if it is sarcastic, we'll take it. We'll take anything we can get, Steve. You know how radio guys are.
I get it, guys.
Absolutely. So I want to play this clip quickly. I know you've heard it, but for the audience, if you haven't, Marcus Stroman gave up a couple of solo shots, but his numbers have been solid this year. His name's been out in the rumor mill forever, and he was asked about all the rumors and whether or not he believes he'll be here beyond July, and here's what Stroman said postgame.
Seems like everybody's saying I'm not going to be, so I don't know. Like I said, I'm doing everything in my power to keep all of that out of my head. The more I'm going to spend thinking about that, the more it's going to take away from me on the field. So I'm just trying to literally put that at the back of my head and not even think about it.
Well, I think he is probably thinking of it. It's human nature, but his numbers would indicate that it isn't affecting him on the mound. I think he's been handling the situation pretty well, Steve. What do you think?
Oh, I got to tell you, like, I hardly know who he is anymore. He sounds like this mature, controlled guy, thoughtful. And, you know, I think that what happens a lot of times with players is that they fight it, right? They fight things, and then they get to a place of acceptance that they start to understand there are some things they can control and some things they can't. It's taken Marcus a little bit longer. And the other part of it for him is, you know, he likes to create a villain in order to get energy. He needs a chip on his shoulder and a reason to sort of go after somebody. And the organization's been sort of that easy target for him with arbitration and you know, some of the struggles and all of that, not getting a contract extension. And, you know, a reasonable person would think, yeah, I don't know that I'd give him a contract extension because he's not been a predictably good pitcher. He's had ups and downs. He's had injuries. And so, you know, you have to be somewhat concerned. But I really am so impressed that he's kind of gotten to that place of accepting that I can't control the outside. I can only control what I focus on. And I know I need boundaries and I need blinders to keep that stuff out. And I get asked about it, and I don't really want to talk about it because I don't ever want to let it in. And he's handling it very, very well. So I'm really impressed by it. He deserves some credit for and recognition for that.
Well, based on his numbers, again, they've been solid. He's got like a 3.23 ERA. His strikeout-to-walk ratio has been pretty good. He's given them innings. If it gets to a point, I believe it will. I think he understands the writing's on the wall. He knows he's not going to be here. What kind of market do you expect for a guy like Stroman?
You know, I think it really depends. If Max Scherzer and or Trevor Bauer are available, then I think Stroman's market is a little bit less than otherwise. If Scherzer's not getting traded, if Bauer's not getting traded, then Stroman becomes a very appealing guy and really may lead the starting pitching class that is out there available to trade deadline. You know, maybe Bumgarner will be out there, but I mean, Bumgarner will definitely be out there. But I look at him and think, okay, he's aging a bit. You know, in fact, not chronologically, just in pitching. His stuff is diminished. His fastball has dropped off. He's not the same guy he once was. And people are intrigued by what he did in the postseason several years ago, but that's not the same guy's pitching today. He doesn't have the same stuff, doesn't have the same approach. So Stroman may end up being the lead guy if it's not Scherzer and Bauer. So I think from the Blue Jays' perspective, you know, they've got a couple of choices. They can try to go out early and leave teams who may have interest in Scherzer and Bauer to a point of uncertainty. Like, we don't know if those guys are going to be available. So if you want Stroman, you better get him now. That way you create a sense of urgency because if they lose out on him, then, you know, you might be dealing with some of the lesser guys that could end up being available. Or you wait. And you play it out, and you see if Scherzer and Bauer are there, let them go off the board, and then you really push your guy. If you lose him, you're not going to get anybody, and try to build market that way. So I think that they have the right to expect to get, you know, a one top prospect and maybe a secondary guy. I don't think it'll be an organization's best prospect in return, but, you know, if they have three or four guys at the top, they'll probably get one of the lesser top flight guys. And then a second-type prospect back in a deal.
Steve, we were talking in the last hour about the Blue Jays' success or lack of it this year. There's some real scary numbers just basically surrounding the team. But, you know, if you had a crystal ball, do you think this team gets to 60 wins? Or is it in mid-50s? Like, when you're looking at it and with the possible moving out of guys like Stroman, like, is this scorched earth?
Yeah, I think it is. The likelihood is they move Stroman, maybe Sanchez, although, you know, he's going to have to prove to a team out there that if they make a deal for him, that, I mean, honestly, he'd be a guy for a player to be named later, and then that player to be named later is determined based on whether he stays healthy or not for the team that he were to go to. But Giles, if they move him, if they move Piacini, you know, some of the more predictable guys out of the bullpen, then, yeah, this got a chance to really spiral because they don't have a lot of major league ready depth as we've seen with the Edwin Jackson usage so far. So, yeah, I think it's got a chance to spiral, and I would not be shocked if they're going to lose 100 games. I don't think it'll be 110, but I think somewhere between 100 and 110 games is probably where they end up losing.
With Steve Phillips, I think if you're being an optimist, I mean, you came into the season knowing the Jays are going to lose a lot of games. You're hoping that the kids can show you something. And I think at the plate, you know, since Gurriel Jr.'s come up, he's hit very well. You know, I think they've got something there. Kevin Biggio, he struck out a lot, but he's hit for power. He's got an OPS up over 850. And Vladdy had that tough start, but we all know what Vladdy's all about. I think, you know, again, it's difficult to find positives on a team that's 21 games under 500 and has lost six in a row at home, but I think those three names in particular, Gurriel Jr., Biggio, and Vladdy Guerrero Jr., I think they can be a part of this whole ship moving forward.
No, I agree. I would love Lourdes Gurriel if he could play some infield and outfield. Now, he's playing the outfield right now. He's doing more than an adequate job. He got four outfield assists. You know, teams are testing him. see what he can do, but he's got athleticism. He's starting to swing the bat again. You know, I think he's, you know, as a, he doesn't profile necessarily as a corner outfielder where you're looking at him as a 25 to 30 homer guy. He's more of a Marwin Gonzalez for me. If I would love to be able to move around a little, but the infield, you know, throwing is the issue, whether he can get that back under control. So, but he can play some outfield, and so I'm okay with that. And I think Biggio is the future at second base. He can play some outfield too, but I love his bat. I think the strikeouts are going to come down. He's going to get this. You know, he's just a young guy that's sort of chasing a little bit. I really do like what I see. His demeanor is perfect. He doesn't get upset one way or the other. He doesn't get, you know, over aggressive with it. He'll take close pitches and knowingly take those pitches. You know, if they can get Jansen going, in some way sort of get him swinging the bat and make it feel like, you know what, okay, you know, I got a horrible start, but, you know, he's got himself on track right now, and he finished his year hitting 260, you know, for the rest of the season, and he has a 330 on base, and, you know, he can show some pop. That would make a huge difference too. So if you could take care of catcher, third base, and potentially second base with Biggio, and Gurriel is sort of that, you know, guy you can move in a number of different places. And look, I want to keep watching Rowdy Tellez and see what that can look like. You're well on your way. That's why for me, so Jim Bowden, who's a former Major League General Manager, and I wrote this in my column last week. He and I were on MLB Network Radio, and we negotiated a deal. And it was Alex. He was Alex Anthopoulos in the Braves, and I was Ross Atkins in the Jays. And we brokered a deal that included Stroman, Giles, and Biagini going to Atlanta. And in return, you know, what I was able to get back in return was Ender Inciarte, who's a Gold Glove center fielder, because I don't think they have a center fielder right now in the Mets. So you bring him in to play center field. He could be an 7-8-9 hitter, a 1-2 hitter, table setting guy, can run a little bit. Then you get three pitchers in return: Tuki Toussaint, Sean Newcomb, both of whom are in their bullpen right now, but are real starters. And Newcomb last year had a near no hitter at the big league level. And then you get Kyle Wright, one of their top prospects as well. And you can bring back three pitchers and a Gold Glove center fielder. If you put Biagini, Giles, and Stroman together in a deal, that would bring in pitching prospects to go with the position player prospects, where I think they would get some balance with the depth of the organization at the two levels. That's the kind of deal I'd love to see them make.
Grappler, send that clip to Mark Shapiro, and we'll just make sure we get that deal done, because
exactly.
That makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yep.
Great stuff as always, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, guys. My pleasure.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst.
Makes sense.
Yeah, well, listen, you got to start filling out. They need pitching eventually. Like, that is the obvious building block that is just nowhere close to being put in place. Because you can't forget about Bichette. Bichette's coming up at some point as well, and he's going to fit into the mix.
Yeah.
And he's right. If Jansen can get the bat going like we saw in September, if you have the catching position, third base, maybe short, maybe second, maybe first with Tellez, and then you've got Gurriel. I guess Grichuk's going to be a part of this. All of a sudden, you're starting to fill out a lineup where if you give them some seasoning, they could be something in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
They really could. But if you've got Edwin Jackson on the mound, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right?
You're
it doesn't
have
matter.
That early on
yeah.
through but, the growing pains.
Right. And they're drafting and they're trying to develop these right. arms and they're trying to move them up the system. But you can't.
Yeah, you can't rush time.
You got to crawl before you walk, before you sprint.
Ugh.
Right, that's
it's
development
be
for you.
Nights.
Oh, it's
going to
be awful.
Nights.
Like I don't see them winning 60 games now. I start before the year started. I said I find it impossible to picture 70 wins, and now I'm.
I thought you picked 74, and then you dropped it to 70, and then now you were in the 60s, and now you're in like the high 50s.
Yeah,
56
I'm high
50s to 58.
That's where I'm at. I just call him as I see
him. Not going any lower.
I call him as I see him.
You're not going to wake up and go, yeah, it's a 42-win season.
No, right? they're not going to catch, quote-unquote, Baltimore.
Right.
There's some awful teams. Miami's terrible. But I don't know. The Jays are right there.
Yeah.
They're in the running. NHL Awards tonight in Vegas. We'll touch on that quickly. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the over in the Blue Jay game tonight. I'm on Philly in the doubleheader because Max Scherzer with a broken nose is on the mound for the Nats. I don't think that's going to go so well for him.
You don't think he's going to be able to?
I don't think he's happy. Although no. It was his own, he tried to lay down a bunt in batting practice, and it ricocheted off the bat and broke
that
his nose.
That would hurt.
That's not going to go over well. And I'm on the Dodgers home plus against the San Francisco Giants. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. NHL awards tonight in Vegas.
Yep.
We were just discussing in the break. I think Kucherov's going to win the Hart. Giordano's going to win the Norris. I think Vasilevsky will win the Vezina.
Yeah,
Pettersson's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah,
I think the debate is Coach of the Year.
Yeah, and we were talking about that.
Who do you like in the Coach of the Year tonight?
I had Cooper as a slam dunk. I actually voted on it, too.
Trotz had a great year. Berube should get it, but depending on when the votes went in, if they went in before the playoffs, then it doesn't matter.
Now that I think about it, we were talking about it. I actually voted
on it. Okay, so when did you send the vote in? Before the playoffs began?
Oh, yeah. It was like April 11th
or
something.
Okay, so Berube's not winning then. Which is going to be weird because Cooper's going to be up there and be like, we got swept in the first round.
Yeah.
Great stuff, Craig. You won a cup.
I know.
Coach of the Year, I'm out of here.
I think some of these awards should be awarded or at least voted on halfway through the playoffs when you see some of the dust settle. But then I think you get biased because with Jordan Binnington with Rookie of the Year ahead of Elias Pettersson.
Yeah. Well, I do think, why can't you have more playoff awards at your award show?
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, it's your own rules.
I know.
You know, like,
Right, though. Like, I voted on it, and I had John Cooper at one. He was a lock every day of the week.
I'll bet you had Trotz second.
I had Trotz second, and I...
Yeah, Berube third, or...
I want to say Berube, or I may have had Peters out of Calgary.
Yeah, he had a great year. I think that Ted Lindsay will be interesting tonight, too.
Yeah.
Because I think Kucherov will win the Hart, but I think we wouldn't be surprised if McDavid won the Lindsay.
Oh, for sure. The players think that McDavid's the best player in the world, hands down.
Yeah.
And they'll vote for him.
I think they probably will.
Yeah.
He's going to rack up a lot of Ted Lindsay's.
Yes, he will.
All right, we believe the O-Dog will be back tomorrow. We'll find out, I guess, at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.